Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your acid trails of music news and sense derangement. I'm your host, Ben Ratliff. We're hearing LSD by A$AP Rocky from his second...
A big,
serious album.
Yeah.
At long last.
A$AP.
Hey, John Caramonica.
Yo.
It seems to me that every time the subject of A$AP Rocky comes up, there you are.
Yeah, yeah. Is that a...
kind of like behind home plate.
Is that a
with
shot?
The catcher's mitt.
Is that a shot?
No, but I do want to stress that you feel a certain way about A$AP Rocky. I think that you have pinpointed him in the past as an almost complete example of what new commercial hip-hop could portend.
Yes. Yeah, I think that that's right.
And do you think that he gets it right on this new record, which is a Doors of Perception kind of record? It's a very druggy album.
It is a very druggy album, although... It's important to remember, and this is something I point out in my piece,
yeah.
You know, this is the ooze from which Rocky has emerged. If
right.
you look at the early Rocky songs, you look at Purple Swag is a record about codeine.
Sure. Different kind of ooze.
A lot of those records, even Peso, which is like a more direct record, but still had a little bit of that kind of like Houston undercurrent to
That's
it.
Right.
Those are drug records.
I was just going to say, with those early A$AP Rocky records,
yeah.
It's sort of like Houston 2.0 or 3.0 or something.
Yeah.
But with this, the ooze is a little different.
It is. There are a couple reasons for that. One, I think the drugs are different. Two, the people behind the boards are different. I don't know if we want to do it right off the rip, but at some point we really should talk about Danger Mouse. Because when I heard that Danger Mouse was one of the executive producers of this record, I got real nervous.
Why?
Because Danger Mouse is not a guy who I associate with forward-thinking hip-hop mm-hmm. in 2015. I mean, here's a guy who started off as a hip-hop producer. I mean, then did the Gray album. Didn't he have those records with Gemini the Gifted One or whatever it was? Anyway, Google it. And then he had the Gray album, which was sort of such a pop culture watershed moment mm-hmm. that I did not enjoy that much. Mm-hmm. Is it okay to say that?
More than okay.
Yeah. That record was very whatever. That's like, that was a record for like Time magazine readers.
Mm-hmm.
Piece to Time magazine readers. Mm-hmm. After that, he became sort of, I want to say in demand, although I really don't know what the degree of demand is for Danger Mouse,
mm-hmm.
but in demand for rock bands trying to do like a cool record.
Yeah.
So he like did something with the Black Keys, did something with...
Who?
Yeah, exactly. And some other bands who we shall not name.
Uh-huh.
And then all of a sudden here he is, you know, co-executive producing this A$AP Rocky record.
Sure.
So, like, obviously I'm nervous. It's like a nerve-wracking thing. The thing that Danger Mouse has, I think, really cornered the market on are, like, these lonely-sounding production. There's sort of a hollowness at the core. They're distant. I wouldn't go so far as to say that they're trippy, but they are they're not fully lucid. If you match that with what Rocky was bringing to the table, which is a bit of a psychedelic influence, a bit of druggy abstraction, it turns out that the match is actually a pretty good match. So I do think that this record succeeds. And I also think it succeeds in a way that the first Rocky solo record did not succeed. That's a record that I enjoy, but is very much all over the place. There's a record with Skrillex on that album.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's Fashion Killa, which is like Brian Eno Gap ad. There's Problems, the single, which is not even really a Rocky record. It's a record that was given to Rocky in full from Drake's production team. From
yeah.
40 and, I don't know if it was 40 and Boy Wonder, but certainly 40. It just came and in a full package and they put Rocky on it. It became his first single. It didn't sound like him at all.
And therefore, it's possible to think maybe, you know, maybe this is an underinformed way of looking at it, but it's possible to think of Rocky as a little bit of a blank slate, right? Because he's moved through all these different sounds and looks, and he's so alive to the possibilities of what hip-hop could sound like and what it could be like, and sort of issues of almost like style issues, sonic style issues. And this record has a lot of different producers, and yet it's also a, you know, really going in there psychedelic record, which makes me a little bit queasy, you know, because it makes you think of early examples of people sort of cashing in on psychedelia, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And not making a state sort of a personal statement.
Sure.
But doing something that's sort of, you know, styled and managed. Trendy.
Right. Although what I would say is, A, this isn't trendy because no one else is doing it. Maybe it'll be trendy because he's doing it, but it's not sort of inherently trendy.
Right.
Two, I feel like my contention with Rocky is you can draw a straight line from mixtape Rocky, internet Rocky, to this,
yeah.
That skips album one Rocky.
Mm-hmm.
That album one Rocky is the thing that should probably make you
okay.
queasy. If something's going to make you queasy, that's probably the thing that should make you queasy.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of good songs on that first record, but a thing that always kind of stuck in my craw about it is it didn't sound like Rocky. This record sounds like Rocky. It has attitude. His rhyme patterns are there. The reference points are there. The things that made him so attractive in 2011, 2012 to someone like myself looking for the new wave, you know, all puns intended, but like looking for the wave, they're back. And they were gone and they're back. And I'm relieved to hear that.
There's some serious drift on the record too, no?
When you say drift, you mean?
Oh, you know, you get to the middle of the song and you don't feel like you're in the middle of the song.
Oh, no.
You're just kind of, you know, it's just kind of going on.
Yeah, no. And I think, like I said, there's a hollowness. There's a Spacey almost doesn't do it justice. You really are swimming out in the middle of the lagoon
yeah.
in a lot of this stuff. And that said, it's kind of a long record. It's, you know, maybe an hour and 10 minutes. I mean, could you lose 15 or 20 minutes of this record? Yeah, you could probably lose 15 or 20 minutes if we're being honest. But you do feel like you're swimming out in the middle of the lagoon. But I think that's sort of a mark of success. You know, it's funny because there are all these guests on the record.
Yeah.
And normally I'd encounter a record like that with all these guests and it'd just be so linear. You'd
yeah.
be like, oh, well, now's the guest verse.
Right.
There comes the guest.
Right.
And here, that sometimes they show up at the wrong time. Sometimes they're clustered together. Like,
so there's an element of surprise.
Yeah, like the song Jukebox Joints with Kanye. Like Kanye doesn't show up till like, it's like a 5-minute song. He doesn't show up till like 4:20 or 4:30 or something. It's bizarre.
That's a very positive thing.
I agree. Again, it's a relief because the thing that Rocky promised, and I think we should talk about like what the promise of Rocky was 3 to 4 years ago. But the thing that he promised was sort of like a fashionable, accessible, mainstream hip-hop paradigm
yeah.
that was not the other ones that was on offer. It was not what Wayne was doing. It was not what Drake was doing. Mm-hmm. It was not what Kanye was doing. It was artistic. It was swaggering. Mm-hmm. It was fashionable, like genuinely fashionable, not mm-hmm. like Jay-Z in an ill-fitting suit fashionable, like actually fashionable. It was all of these things. It's not so much that Rocky didn't fulfill those things as that bits and pieces of them got broken off and kind of assimilated into the mainstream. So now everybody wears Hood by Air, mm-hmm. you know, and how ridiculous is that? I remember like being at like some Meek Mill show and there's like a lot of people wearing Hood by Air. And I was yeah. like, this just doesn't feel right. This is not what it's supposed to be.
Well, we're in the artisanally wavy section of hip hop history.
Literally platinum members right here.
Okay. So we heard a little bit of LSD, which is a song based in factual events.
Seems that way.
Yeah.
You know, like I wasn't with him.
No.
You know, that's not my reporting did not go to that level. But yeah, that's the vibe. He also recently gave a rather hilarious interview to the New York Post where he told a story about being at South by Southwest and McConan gave him some acid. And then he took acid and then had like a series of orgies with all these women.
Mm.
And he was like, that's a true story. My favorite part of that interview was he said 9 women. And the interviewer from the Post, this kid Hardeep, said, mm-hmm. that's 9, as in 1 fewer than 10.
Uh-huh.
It's a great, like literally a yeah. great rejoinder yeah. question. Because like you do want to make sure that he said 9.
Right.
But then you also want to be like, if he said 9, but I'm not quite sure what he's saying, I also want to give another context point. So that's very important. That's an important journalistic technique, kids. Like, always verify your facts.
So that's the backstory for LSD. What's the backstory for Jukebox Joints? Or the meaning?
There are a bunch of moments on this record where I feel like there's Rocky protesting about, like, I do all these things. And then, like, everybody else started doing these things. And there are a lot of places on this record where he does that. He sort of like, oh, I was fashionable. And then this guy was fashionable. Or, I, you know, even when I interviewed him a couple months ago for the Yams thing, you could tell he's, like, a little aggravated that, like, at a certain point, he was the only legitimately fashionable guy in the game. And now all of a sudden, fashion's everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody can have a piece of it. But the only person who can really go toe for toe with him on that stuff is Kanye. Mm-hmm. So Kanye shows up and does this like weird free jazz verse at the end of this song where he's like, Saint Laurent is my Zara. He doesn't even pronounce Zara. That's how much disdain he has for Zara that he won't even pronounce it correctly. Mm-hmm. Kanye does this kind of like blurt at the end of the song for 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. It's quite lovely. It's sloppy. It doesn't sound like anything on Yeezus, for example. Mm-hmm. It's like he came to Rocky's world. Mm-hmm. Rocky didn't go to his world. He came to Rocky's world. Mm-hmm. And that's notable, I think.
Let's hear a little bit of Jukebox Joints.
Man, remember, your man was on stage dressed like a family member. Man, everything basic to Ye Guevara. That means Saint Laurent is my Zara. I remember Rochelle ain't wanna with the polo. Hey, you missed out. Hashtag FOMO. I got one child, but I'm like I'm trying to make FOMO. They want to throw me under a white jail because I'm a black man with confidence of a white male. Hallelujah.
So that's Jukebox Joints from A$AP Rocky's new record, At Long Last, his languorous and swampy new record.
Who wrote that?
I think you might have.
Those are some adjectives.
Yeah.
A thing that's worth mentioning, and I sort of alluded to it just now in the Kanye, talking about the Kanye song. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of guests on this record. They say it was like 2002. That would be like the biggest red flag ever. This guy can't hold down a record. He's got Fat Joe on this song. Mm-hmm.
Why isn't it a red flag now?
I think from a distance, it might be. But what's interesting is the mood of the record does not change at all to accommodate these people. And that's actually what's really striking, because usually you would expect some kind of disruption. Like when Lil Wayne shows up on your song, you expect the air in the room to shift. And I would say 9 times out of 10, if not 10 times out of 10 on this record, the mood doesn't change at all.
What's a comparable album where producers for the songs are by and large different, but the mood and overall sound is very much the same?
In hip hop?
Yeah.
In the mid 90s to the mid 2000s, as hip hop was very singles driven and very pop driven, everybody was like, you're going to put an R&B singer and we're going to make a very bright track. And those songs would invariably disrupt otherwise street albums. Mm-hmm. Or street rappers who made a lot of those songs would then throw a few like street records to kind of like remind people that they were still street rappers. Mm-hmm. There was like an entire decade where this wasn't even really an option. Like the thing that jumps to mind when you ask that question is Illmatic. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that A Long Last ASAP is as good as Illmatic, but it is consistent in a way that like Illmatic was probably, I remember I wrote something about Illmatic once where I was like, I was trying to be provocative. I was basically being like, Illmatic basically ruined album-oriented rap. Because even though Illmatic sounds very similar, certainly from a 20-year distance, it sounds like it all was recorded on like an 8-track recorder, you know?
Right.
But even in the time, it sounded pretty consistent. What it proved is that a rapper didn't have to go in a hole with one producer for 6 months to find a sound and then make an album. It was like 10 different guys providing Nas with 10 different sounds that all ended up kind of being in the same family. And what that showed is you can then go out, you can basically start subcontracting the work. And it became much more acceptable, certainly in East Coast rap, it became much more acceptable to start outsourcing. Is that really the legacy of Illmatic? Probably not. Did it make a sort of compelling argument for a couple thousand words? Yes.
You're saying that what that resulted in was albums with different producers on every track.
Making different sounds that
were all over the place.
Right.
It basically legitimized
the practice of going out.
But you're saying that this is a sort of victory because it gets back to the Illmatic model of a consistency.
This is an album that is very well executive produced.
And who's the executive producer?
There are three: A$AP Rocky, Danger Mouse, and A$AP Yams.
And was most of the work on this record finished before the death of A$AP Yams?
Much of it was finished. And the sense I get from having spoken to Rocky previously is that Yams was not in the studio for a lot of the stuff. Certainly, a lot of the record, I think, was recorded in London or in California in Danger Mouse's studio. I don't think Yams was in those sessions. I think he was giving feedback, you know, virtually and from a distance, but I don't think he was in the room for the sessions. But this is a coherent record. Look, the thing with Rocky and the thing that made Rocky so exciting in 2011, 2012 was you're like, here's a guy who is from Harlem, good looking guy, fashionable, has genuine charisma, also knows like all the weird Memphis 3-6 Mafia spinoff stuff, knows like Chicago street stuff, Do or Die and things like that. Very, very well versed in regional rap history. Some of that on his own, some of that because Yams, who was riding shotgun with him, is basically like the one of the truest scholars of hip hop working inside the hip hop industry. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, those pieces I wrote about Yams 3 or 4 years ago were really about that.
And just to remind people, Yams was not working in the traditional role of a producer.
No,
musically.
No, he was, as we used to joke, he was a spirit guide. He's the taste. He's basically like the gut check. Is this cool?
Which became very important to Rocky.
No,
it was from the beginning.
Yes. And that's why Rocky's first album, I think, registers a little false to some people. Mm-hmm. Because it was like, this is not why we like Rocky. We like Rocky because he has good taste. We like Rocky. Now, could you say he's carpetbagging? Could you say that he's like borrowing Houston style, borrowing Memphis? Mm-hmm. Sure. Cleveland style, whatever. Yes. But undeniably, he knew it cold. Even on this record, there's a song where he raps like Bone Thugs. There's a song where he raps like 3-6. Like, it's here on the record. He's still good at it. Mm-hmm. Even with all these big guests, like Wayne doesn't show up on a song and then Rocky's like, I'm going to start rapping like Wayne. Like Rocky is fully formed at this point. Mm-hmm. He raps like Rocky. Does Rocky's native style incorporate all these different sounds and cadences and patterns? Of course. But the fact that he can sort of stand on his own up against Kanye or Wayne or these other folks who are on the record, I think speaks well of where he is at this particular moment in his career, mm-hmm. that he's not sort of capitulating. He's not trying to make a traditional radio record. He's not trying to make a Drake record. Drake is notably not on this record.
Right.
The two big people who are not on this record are Drake and Jay-Z. MIA is on this record. Future's on this record. I mean, you know, Pimp C. There's a posthumous verse from Pimp C on this record.
Right. And so we can ascribe a certain amount of these choices to Yams.
Yes, I would think so.
So Yams acted as the taste controller mm-hmm. for Rocky. Now Yams is gone. What now?
The fact that this record came out the way it did and Yams was not in the studio every day, you've got to assume that Rocky has a fairly refined sense of himself.
Sure.
I think he also knows, we didn't talk about this, but my sense is instinctively he knows that some of the decisions last time around were not like the right decisions for his particular brand. He's not music first. He's aesthetic first.
Mm-hmm.
The music on this album fits very comfortably within his aesthetic. So if he has evolved and refined to the point where he knows that and can make those decisions now, hopefully he'll be able to continue to make those decisions as long as he wants to. He also started producing in the last 12 to 18 months, started making beats. He has a couple of, I think, credits on this album. Mm-hmm. On some level, he's trying to make the sounds that he hears in his head. He doesn't want to be reliant on producer A or producer B.
Are his fashion choices changing in line with the sound of this record? Is he wearing like drug rugs and caftans?
Well, drug rugs are very in right now, just FYI. Caftans are about to be popping. So, I mean, you say that in like a jesty, grampy
way. Let's just say that I was completely serious.
Okay, well then you're dead on it.
Okay.
Drug rugs are super popping right now. And caftans, I mean, I was at Dover Street Market yesterday or the day before. It was an ill-cropped J.W. Anderson men's caftan. Phenomenal, like a beach scene on it. It was nuts. It was like $1,600. I very seriously thought about buying it, and I was like, I will never wear this, mm-hmm. but this is beautiful.
Sandals?
That's a step too far. If you want to like extrapolate slightly, can you argue that psychedelic culture, broadly construed, is currently or is about to have a mildly more mainstream moment in the world of fashion, music, and otherwise? I think you can probably make that case. Mm-hmm. In which case, Rocky is very on trend. I'm not sure that he's going to go to the Dead reunion shows in Chicago in a few weeks' time.
I think tickets are sold out anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
You don't think your man can get a ticket?
I don't.
I think your man can probably get a ticket if he wanted to.
So Wavy Bone is the track that we're going to go out
with. Yeah, Wavy Bone is one of Yams' many nicknames. Juicy J is on it. UGK is on it, including a verse from Pimp C, who died many years ago. And it's funny, when Rocky came out on his Houston sound, a lot of people, certainly from the town, were just like, who's this guy? Carpet baggy. And then, of course, at a certain point, Bun B co-signed him and kind of gave him a little bit of credibility. And now here we are coming full circle. I probably should have thought harder about this, but I'm not sure I can remember the last posthumous Pimp C verse that I heard. You know, all of your sound will belong to me. You know, Rocky is like, not only am I Houston and I'm post-Houston, but I actually have Pimp C on my record.
Sure.
And like that feels like the ultimate fulfillment of Yams' vision. because Yams and Yams is mine just because Rocky was from Harlem and just because he was a pretty guy and all this other stuff. He didn't think Rocky was not part of this tradition. And now here are songs that demonstrate that he is part of the tradition and it's full circle.
It also feels sort of psychedelic too.
Hey,
I mean, you know, like his spirit lives on. He is we. I am you.
Mm-hmm. You are.
You are we. Here is Wavy Bone from A$AP Rocky's At Long Last. Thank you, John Caramonica. Getting money is.
All the nights on different corners, spitting pitching water. Now I'm richer off the I thought of. From the home of the richest ballers, I'm Richard Porter mixed with Mr. Porter. This picture all the jiggy I ordered. I went to France and almost got deported. The fans are screaming when I hit the border. I visit Nice like it's my sister's daughter.
That's our show, and thank you for listening. Our producers are Tamara Best and Jocelyn Gonzalez. You can read John Caramonica about A$AP Rocky at nytimes.com/music. Listen to our Spotify playlist with tracks from A$AP Rocky and others related to him musically and stylistically. We'll see you next week.
Get money is what I do.